last few days, not that I plan on wrapping up totally today, because there are more we need to see. We can take this through. There's another strand that goes through Shosh Rishon, Sheni, Shlishi. But at least let's try to get to a certain point. We started talking yesterday about the Sugyan Brachot, about Kavod HaBriyot and Yichen and Beck going on to Chacham and Aleph. And we noted that the Rambam in Hilchot Kalayim, Part Yud, Halacha Chaf Tet, says, Haro Kalayim Shel Torah Al Chavero, Apilei Mahalas B'Shuk, Kofi Tvo B'Kol Alav Miyad. Apilei Haya Rabo Shalim Do Chachma, Shein Kavod HaBriyot Docha, Yisro Rota Sam Kurosh B'Torah. And he goes on to say, V'lam Nincha B'Ashev Veda, etc. He discusses these various categories, which we need time to really explain where they fit into the sheet of the Rambam. But in any case, they continues a couple lines later about Davar Shisurom Mitivrehem Harehu Nidchem Znei Kvod Abriyot B'kol Makom V'af Al Pi Shekatu B'Torah Lo Tassur Me Adavar. Nonetheless, Harei Lav Zeh Nidchem Znei Kvod Abriyot. And we mentioned that there are many the Rush, for example, disagrees with this. He thought there are a number of difficulties with this Rambam. Number one, for me not to remove someone else's shatnez ostensibly is not an Easter at all. If it is an Easter, a lav mafurish b'torah, and even word a lav mafurish b'torah, but I'm doing it b'sheva al tasa, which the Gemara says anyhow. Kavod HaBriyot is docha if it's b'sheva al tasa. Between all these reasons, it's very strange that this person's Kavod HaBriyot of keeping his clothing on doesn't supersede my requirement to take off their clothing. That's number one. Number two, and of course that's a point of contention amongst Rishonim. Number two, what does the Rambam mean by Isur lo taseh hamefurash b'torah? What's a lo taseh that's not mefurash b'torah as opposed to a lo taseh that's mefurash b'torah? And what happens to a lo taseh that's not mefurash b'torah? Aside from what it would be, but what is its status? Is it Docha Kavod HaBriyot? Is it not Docha Kavod HaBriyot? Is Kavod HaBriyot Docha? How does it work? Because that seems to be an ambiguous middle ground. In addition to those questions that we raised last time, we have another issue. We have to stop outstanding business with Shor HaSheni, of course. Come back to Beit Hashem. But aside from that, there's also a very interesting Beit Yosef, which is debated back and forth amongst Achronim and Poskim. In Siman Yud Gimel, Arachayim, the Beit Yosef says that he raises the following issue. The Gemara says explicitly that if a person is wearing a talit, and they're walking along and it's Shabbos and they're wearing a talit and it has tzitzit on it, that's great, right? It's malbush, no problem. But if the tzitzit are not kasher, so then there's a problem because it's not considered to be malbush, it's considered to be something that you're carrying. That's a problem. So the Gemara says that if it's in Rishut Harabim, you have to take off your talit. If it's in a Carmelit, so then you can keep it on. Why? Because we saw the Kavod HaBriyot is Docha Yisurim D'Rabbanan. Very nice. So Beit Yosef asks a very interesting question. He says, the Gemara is talking about, you know, in their day when your talit was a basic component of your attire. You know, that's part of, you know, in other words, the talit, I'm not saying if you took it off you'd be naked, but you certainly would not be, you know, that's one of the main garments you're wearing, right? That's like, you know, I'm thinking that was like, you didn't have much on under it. You have an undergarment or something, but basically, that's what you're wearing. So therefore, that's the normal case in the time of the Gemara. We're wearing a talit as something that you're wearing on top of your clothing. That was your clothing. Your clothing had tzitzit on it. So if you take off your talit, it's an issue of Kavod HaBriyot. But says the Beit Yosef, if I'm going, you know, I'm walking home from shul, and I'm wearing my talit, and under my talit I have my suit jacket, under my suit jacket I have my shirt, under my shirt I have my undershirt, right? And then on top of all the layers, and maybe I have a coat on even, under every, like on top of everything, I'm wearing a talit, so is it an issue of Kavod HaBriyot? There's no Kavod HaBriyot for me to keep my talit on. So if I'm in a Carmelit, right, Rishut Ram D'Rabbanan, and I discover that my talit, my tzitzit is pasul, maybe I should have to take it off. And Beit Yossi said something remarkable, which is that he thinks, and there are other down the line poking back him up, that he believes that you don't have to take it off. Take it off. So, of course, we all know that Beit Yosef is pretty much in a straight line in terms of, you know, intellectual history and you know, procedure in Psak. As Beit Yosef, as a matter of fact, he was criticized for this, that the Beit Yosef, to a very, very large degree, follows whom when it comes to halakha, the single most important rishon for the Beit Yosef in terms of Psak halakha,
the
Rambam, right? So much so that he was accused, you know, he was criticized in basically stacking the deck, because in the Beit Yosef, that's exactly how you operate the Shulchan Aruch, but this is Beit Yosef, he says that, I have three major Rishonim that I accept as the main authorities, and those are, who are the three main, for the Beit Yosef, who are the three main Rishonim in terms of Psak?
Rambam.
Okay, well, the Rambam's not the first. The Rif, okay. Number two, the Rambam. Number three, the Rosh, right? So it says, well, one second. The problem is that there are only a handful of places where the Rambam doesn't pass like the Rif. So you're going to say that you're going to take two out of three, right? It's kind of stacking the deck. Okay. By the way, I want to correct this. Sorry, I meant to do this the first thing in the share and I forgot. I said something in a previous share that wasn't true and I want to correct it. I don't think it doesn't fundamentally change what we discussed, but I do want to correct the record that I think I mentioned at some point, I'm rather sure I mentioned at some point that there's only one place in the Gemara where it talks about the Targ Mitzvah, and the number Targ, which is not true. There are about a half a dozen places, but it's only not a major, you know, theme in Shas. It's a lot more Midrash, but in any case, but it's not one place. It's not just Gemara and Makot. There are other Sugyot as well. Okay, anyhow, so just for the record. Okay, let's move on. So the question is like this. What's going on with this Beit Yosef? What's going on with this Rambam? Right, what's this all about? So I think that the Rambam really rests on two principles that once we understand them, we understand the Rambam, we understand the Beit Yosef, we understand a lot more than that. The two principles are like this. Number one, the Rambam understands the sugya really, really, really. The whole sugya can be boiled down to two principles. Number one, principle number one is that we have to understand what kavod habriyot is. That kavod habriyot does not mean whether a person is going to be embarrassed or they're not going to be embarrassed. I say that's not important, but that's not this concept of kavod habriyot in the sugya. Kavod HaBriyot means human dignity. And human dignity is not just a function of what I feel, what I think, or what's going to be comfortable or uncomfortable for me, but it means that I'm acting in a certain way that expresses human dignity. And the basic principle that I believe underlies everything that the Rambam says, and certainly the whole sugya, the way the Rambam understands it, is that it is an internal contradiction. If you can't say that it is kavod habriyot for me to do something that is asur. That's kavod habriyot for me to act in a way that is the antithesis of what my purpose in creation is. I can't say that to act in a way that is not what God intends for me, that's not kavod habriyot. That's not expression of human dignity. Sometimes, you know, a person may feel very comfortable acting a certain way, they're really being very undignified, they may not realize it, they may not feel it, they may not sense it, or they may, acting a certain way because they feel more comfortable that way because of peer pressure, social norms, whatever the case may be. It's a very undignified way to act objectively, and sometimes vice versa. The basic assumption of the Gemara is that if I'm doing something and it's actually asur, by actually violating what the Torah wants from me, then that can't be, then by definition, that's not kavod habriyot. For me to do something that may be personally embarrassing, it may be difficult, it may be painful, but I'm doing what is really what I ought to be doing, that is, you know, in the ultimate sense, dignified and heroic, etc. And therefore, The Gemara basically is saying like this from the vantage point of the Rambam. If a person is acting in a way that is asur, can be covered up riyot. But to the degree that it's possible for a person to act in a way that they're not going to be embarrassed, they're not going to be uncomfortable, and at the same time it's going to be mutar, then that is certainly something that's desired. And therefore, and from a halakhic point of view, and therefore, the Gemara starts off with Amar of Yehuda Marav. Hamotzi klein bevigdo poshan afil b'shuk maitayma in chachman vein tfuna vein etz l'neged Hashem. Right? If it's l'neged Hashem, if we're going against God's will, if we're going against what the Torah says, if we're doing science aser, it's not, there are no chachmas. It's not covered up riyot, it's not, you know, that's it. It's, so the Gemara says, but what about this and what about that and what about the other? What about the case of Beit HaPra, you know, about Kohen Beit HaKfarot, and what about the case of Medalgam Hayinu, Agabe Aron, and so on and so forth? So Gemara says, in each of those cases, we're talking about a Durabanan. Until finally the Gemara says that Gadol Kavod HaBriot, Shadokha Lot HaSei Shabbatar, and we say, what Lot HaSei? The Lot HaSei is talking about Lot HaSer. Well, Lot HaSer, that's ridiculous. Lot HaSer is also a law. No, we're talking about Isurim Durabanan. Right, so what has that helped, right? So the bottom line is the following. If you look at every single case where there is a conflict between the Isur and between the Kavod HaBriot, the resolution is either explicitly in the Gemara or in Rashi in the following type of formulation. Take a look at Rashi and we'll get a couple of examples. The etzem kisaora b'maga mitami b'maga v'masa v'lo ba'ohel v'kevan demi d'rabanan hu d'asur rabanan hu d'achluhu liakraihu gabi avel probably gabi avel. Okay, then kol mili d'rabanan b'kulei v'holi kamar lehu davar shehu mi d'ivrei sofrim nidchem z'nei kvod abriyot v'kari le'lo tasei mishum d'ktiv lo tasur u'dekasha lav d'oraitahu Rabbanan achlu liakraihu lavor al divrayim heicha deika kavod abriyot. What Rashi consistently says through this sugya is virtually word for word what the Ramban later says as an explanation for the Rambam, and can be summed up in one word, and that word, where it is, remember the word I told you had to remember from yesterday.
Tonight.
Okay, where's Tanai, right? The Ramban suggestion for the Rambam, namely that really every drabanan is lo tasur, unless it will, I mean, if the Chacham didn't ask for this because they didn't ask the suffix drabanan, so it's not us in the first place. Just like it's not us for me to drink coffee, right? Leaving aside the issue of, you know, anyway, or to drink, let's say, spring water. Okay, no easy to drink spring water. Why? Because there's no easter. No issue of doing a Safek Drabbanan because they weren't gozer on Safek Drabbanan. Right? So the Ramban's explanation for the Rambam of Tanai is exactly what Rashi says consistently, and to some degree it's even in the Gemara in some cases, as to the conflict between Lotasur or Isurim Drabbanan as an extension of Lotasur and Kavod HaBriot. In other words, what the Rambam says is the following. If someone is wearing shatnez d'oraita, I can't say, well, I'm going to leave it on them because of their kavod abriot, because it's not kavod abriot for them to be doing an isur d'oraita. It's not kavod abriot for them to be doing an isur, period. For them to be staying there wearing shatnez is not kavod abriot. But if it were shatnez d'rabanan, that's a whole different story. Because it's not that they're wearing shatnez d'rabanan, but rather what's the pshat? What's the pshat?
The rabbi didn't want you to
not shatnez drabanan. There is no, Chacham said that if you're in a situation where you are unwittingly wearing shatnez drabanan in public, then we're not gozer on that case, right? Now Chacham said there's a rule that, you know, that's not on our list of isurim drabanan, right? Just like wearing, you know, polyester and cotton mixed together is not shatnez drabanan. Wearing shatnez drabanan bashuk is not shatnez drabanan. There is no, it's just not shatnez drabanan. Right? If you discover it, in it, that's excluded. In other words, the saying is that if something is aser, it's not kavod abriyot. But kavod abriyot is a reason, it is a motive, it is a consideration for chachamim to redraw the map of what is included in their isurim drabanan. They never asered this case. Why? Because of kavod abriyot. Because if it were to be aser, right, then it wouldn't be kavod abriyot to wear it, and you wouldn't be able to, you know, to keep it on. Because there'd be no head, it's not kavod abriyot. But because of kavod abriyot, they said it's not aser in the first place. Okay, that's the essence of this Rambam. And if you read the Rambam carefully, he tells us this explicitly. Look at what he says. Haroa kilayim shol Torah al chavero, right? Afilo ya mahalef b'shuk, kovet lo v'koral amiyad, b'afilo ya rao shalindo chachma, she'en kavod abriyot docha isur lo taseh hamefurish b'torah. If the Torah specifies that this is isur, then kavod abriyot is not going to help you. But if it's not mefurish b'torah, who can give me an example? What's an isur? What's a lav she'eno mefurish b'torah? Give me an example of a lav she'eno mefurish b'torah. A lav she'eno mefurish b'torah. What's a lav she'eno mefurish b'torah? What? What's a lav she'enu mefurish b'torah?
Muksa.
Okay. Example, muksa. Shatnez drabanan. Right? In other words, that is a lav that's not mefurish b'torah. Right? In other words, if it's shatnez d'oraita, the Torah told me explicitly this is aser. So Chacham can't do anything about it. And it's not kavod abriyot because it's an iser. But if it's something which the Torah did not specify, although once it's specified by Chacham, it becomes an Issa d'oraita, but since Chacham are the ones who are specifying it, since without their specification it's not an Issa d'oraita, they're able to draw the boundaries wherever they want, and therefore they can take kavod abriyot into consideration. And that's the contrasting part of the Rambam, the end of the Rambam. Aval davar she'isuro midivrayhem, right, as opposed to lo taseh mefurish b'torah, something which is midivrayhem, it's a lav, right? Lotas is a lav. If this were to be hotzad drabanan, shatnez drabanan, whatever it is, I'd be over on lotas, or it would be a lav d'oraita. But it's not mefurash in the Torah that karmelit is aser. There's no karmelit in the Torah. So Chacham can say, this is a karmelit, this is not a karmelit. This is a case where you can't do otsad, this is a case where you can do otsad. This is a case where you can't wear shatnez, drabanan, this is a case where you can't. It's up for grabs because of the fact that it's not mefurash b'Torah. And once we understand that, we understand the Rambam is very simple and very straightforward. And the beginning of the Rambam, the end, form a very neat contrast between a lav hamafurish b'tara, a lo to say hamafurish b'tara, and an example of an iser derabbanan, which is also a lav, but it's not hamafurish b'tara. Okay, because the Torah never specified shai derabbanan and all these other things. Okay, we're okay so far. Stop looking at yes.
So let's just pull back from muksa. Let's say something like malacha, a particular malacha that. People say,
okay, give me a few minutes. I understand what you're saying. Give me a few minutes, and I think, or maybe four, whatever. When we finish just explaining, you know, briefly what Shor HaShani is all about, together with Shor HaRishon, then let's come back to that, and I think you'll see exactly where that fits in. Okay, we need a little bit more. I'm trying to do this systematically, and based on this, the Beit Yosef becomes very clear, right? What does the Beit Yosef say? Beit Yosef says that if I am in a Carmelite and I'm wearing tzitzit that I discover to be possible, I'm allowed to keep it on because of kavod abriyot. And at first glance, and some achronim say this, that's the most ridiculous thing in the world. What do you mean I can keep it on because of kavod abriyot? It's going to impinge on my kavod abriyot. It's going to be undignified. I'm wearing 10 layers of clothing under my talus. You know, I'm dressed to the hilt. I'm ready to go to a wedding, but I have a talus on top of it. So I'm going to take off my talus. That's going to be kavod abriyot. What's the answer? Who wants to say it for us? What's the answer to the Beit Yosef? What's the pshat? Exactly. The Chachamim, the pshat is not that kavod abriyot comes along and supersedes my carrying karmelit. is that when they formulated the halachot of karmelit, they excluded this case. And if they excluded this case, so then if sometime in the, 18th century or in the 16th century or in the 20th century, we suddenly have a situation where now I come along and say, you know what? There's no reason not to take off. Right, there's no reason not to aser wearing a talit chain and mitzvah kalach and karmelit. There's no reason not to have an iser about that. Well, I answer, that's very nice. You're absolutely right, but I don't have the authority to suddenly institute a new iser d'rabbanan. When Chacham made the halacha of karmelit, they never asered this case, so I can't come along. Well, we can't come along and say, okay, all of a sudden we're going to make a new iser d'rabbanan. It's a very important point. There's a whole separate discussion, but you can't just fabricate Yisurim Drabbanan out of thin air. There never was an Issa Drabbanan on this case. And therefore, since there was never an Issa Drabbanan, it's Mutzah. And I can continue to carry it. I mean, because of Kavod HaBriyot, but there's no Kavod HaBriyot for me. That's not the point. Chachamim formulate the laws of karmelit like Swiss cheese, right? With these little holes and jagged edges and all kinds of things where there are exceptions because of Kavod HaBriyot. And it's mutter, period. It doesn't have to involve my kavod abriyah, because that's what they needed to do in order to say that it's not going to be a problem to carry. What I want to bring out is that, number one, I think we see the pshat of the Ramban's suggestion of t'nai, which he himself does not like. Right? Again, remember, the Ramban doesn't like this suggestion, but then again, the Ramban doesn't like the Rambam in general. I don't mean the person, but that shita, he doesn't like Shorish, Shorish Rishon. Okay, but his suggestion for Shorish Rishon, I think is really correct, and you really see that in Hilchot Kalayim. That's really what's going on. And more so, although the Ramban himself asked on the Rambam from this sugya is really a tremendous basis for the Rambam, if you read it the way the Rambam did. Again, I'm not saying it's the only way to read the sugya. I'm saying, but one could easily read this sugya as being entirely about the concept, A, that every Drabbanan is lo tasur, and that's explicit in the Gemara, and that's the whole point of that they were laughing and saying, what do you mean? What do you mean lo tasur? But lo tasur, Drabbanan, that's lo tasur, right? Number one. Number two, the whole idea of t'nai is said again and again in this sugya, right, including in the part about lo tasur. The whole sheet of the Rambam not only is explicit in Hilchot Kalayim, not only is this interpretation of the Rambam explicit in the Rambam himself, but it's actually explicit in the Gemara itself from one particular point of view in terms of how you read the Gemara. Okay, now I did that a little bit fast, and I hope everyone got that to some degree. Let's put that in our back pocket and let's move forward a little bit. Okay, so it's an interesting phenomenon that, moving back to Shorash Sheni, and I'm going to try to put Shorash Sheni and Shorash Rishon together a little bit. Let's start with the following. First of all, sometimes, try to think if you ever had this experience. I know I've had this experience many times. I once actually had the opportunity to sit in as an observer on a family therapy session between parents, a child, and the family, and they were yelling and screaming at each other. That's what family therapy sessions are for, right? They're yelling and screaming at each other and arguing about this whole big thing. And I was sitting there as an outside observer, listening to the whole thing. And, the therapist just sitting there taking notes or whatever. And at some point, it's like, can I interrupt for a second? Am I allowed to say something here? It's like, the reason they're arguing with each other is obvious. That they're arguing with each other because they're really not talking about the same thing at all. They're using the same, they're arguing about this word or term or kind, but they mean totally different things by it. So of course they're, saying different things. And the, that happens a lot. A lot of times you have a situation where you have a kind of, machloket, and it's important to realize that sometimes they're just not using the same vocabulary, right? I mean, same, intellectual vocabulary. And this is a prime example. The first thing, not the last one, but the first thing we need to realize about the Rambam and the Ramban is that the Rambam and the Ramban have a different vocabulary. when the Ramban talks about Dirabanan and when the Rambam talks about Dirabanan, they don't mean the same thing. And so, you know, it's like the Rambam says everything that's learned from the Yud Gimel Midot and Riboy is Dirabanan or Divrei Sofrim. And the Ramban hears that and says, what? It's only Dirabanan? Are you crazy? It can't possibly be only Dirabanan. Everything that's learned from the Yud Gil Midot and Drashul Chazal, it's all of Shas is only Dirabanan. And of course the first simple step that we have to take is to say, slow down for a second. What the Rambam means when he says it's Dirabanan and what you mean when you say it's Drabanan are vastly different things. We've already seen that in Shorash Rishon. Let's not forget, right? In the words, because if a person were to violate a Drabanan, whether by not doing what they're supposed to or by doing what they're not supposed to, whatever it is, the Rambam would say, you violated Doraita. The Ramban would say that you've gone against the Torah, but that Dirabanan is a whole different area of Torah. It's like a spin-off of Torah. You know, it's a whole different area than a Doraita. For the Rambam, there is a difference between Doraita and Dirabanan. We'll get to it as Hashem momentarily. But it's basically, you know, different compartments within one large thing. Not so for the Ramban. For the Ramban, it's like, you know, two whole different areas. So that's the first thing we have to do. Now, that does not answer Sharasheni, it doesn't explain it, etc. We have to see what does Rama mean when he says Drabana, right? Because if it just means it's alright, then it doesn't, what does it mean? So part of the thing that's confusing is that within Drabana slash Dibre Sofim, there are two subcategories for the Ramban. We'll get to that as Hashem, but fundamentally, they're the same. The first thing we have to understand, let's start with first with how they're the same, and then we'll get to, hopefully, how they're different. So to begin with, for the Rambam, in terms of their tokef, in terms of their halachic validity, in terms of the severity of it, in terms of, you know, the basic quality of it, Drabanan are d'oraita. That's number one. Okay, innately, they're before we get to, you know, how Chacham formulated and Tanai and all these things, they start off the same. That's number one. So what is Dirabanan? So the truth of the matter is, I would argue that the Rambam tells us very clearly what he means by Dirabanan and Divrei Sofrim. Okay? And I want to read it with you and to try and show you how the Rambam explains this himself. But first let me just say, When the Rambam says in Shorash Sheni, okay, I hope everyone has both sheets. I don't know if I'm in the next card, but if you look at Shorash Sheni, if not, I'm going to read it anyhow, so don't worry if you don't have it. But in Shorash Sheni, when the Rambam says, V'ulai tachshov, where it's underlined, V'ulai tachshov, Shani boreach milimotan, liotan bilti amitiot, ve'yot hadina yotzei b'midahi, emet o bilti emet, ein zo asiba. He means it. Okay, that's not polemical. The Rambam means it. It's not because the Rambam thinks that these things that are derived from the Yud Gimel Midot or from Ribuyim, etc., that Drashot Chazal are inferior, are less true, are less valid, are less significant. The Rambam means that. He's not saying that just because he doesn't want the Ramban or someone else to come along and put him in Cherem. He's saying it because of the fact that if you look at what he says in Shorash Rishon, that is clearly true. If you look at what he says in Hilchot Kilayim, that's clearly true. However, the Rambam also believes that there is a very important, not halachic difference, but a very important conceptual difference between D'oraita and D'rabbana. Okay? And it is something that I hope to show you over the course of Lineder, over the next, you know, today and the next day or two, is something that the Rambam says not once or twice, but he says over and over again in various forms throughout Shorash Rishon, Shorash Sheni, Shorash Shlishi. There's a consistent sheet of the Rambam. Not sheet is the right word, but it's a consistent approach of the Rambam. And let's take it from the top. Okay, let's start with Shorash Rishon. HaShorash HaRishon. I know I haven't said it yet. Okay, I want to show it to you through the words of the Rambam. Okay, Hashorish Harishon Shein Ra'ui Limno Bechlau Hazer HaMitzvot Shehein Midrabanan. You shouldn't count Rabbanan. He hasn't defined Rabbanan, but you'll see from what he says in a moment, you'll see what he means by Rabbanan. Da Kizan Yan Lo Hayam Ra'ui Lo Rera Lav Livei Ro Ki Achar Shaya Lashon HaTalmud Shlosh Me'ot Shlosh Etre Midot Nemru Lo Lemosha B'Sinai Eich No Mar B'Davar Shumid Rabbanan Shumichlal Minyan. But I need to say it because of the Bahag and all of those who fall in his path, right, as we know. And then he goes on to say, I assume the reason they counted is because of the whole thing with Lo Tasser, and that I agree with, says the Rambam. I think that's true. But then he continues. Okay, Shor Hashem. Shor Hashem. Took my page. Okay. Says that kvar biarnu b'ptichat chibureim b'perash ha-mishnah sh'rov dinei ha-torah yut'u b'shlosh ha-torah midot sh'atorah nidrashah b'hem v'sh'adin ha-yotzei b'midah me'atan midot hinei pamim tipol bo ma'chloket v'shei sham dinim hem perushim mekubalim mimosha ein ma'chloket b'hem aval hem mevi'im raya lehem b'achat m'shlosh ha-torah midot ki mechachmat ha-katuv sh'hu efshar sh'imatzei bo remez morel ha-perush ha-hu ha-mekubal o hekesh y'rela. וכבר ביארנו זה עניין שם, כשיהיה זה כן, הנה לו כל מה שמסר חכמים שהוציאו בהקש משלוש עשרה מידו, נאמר שהוא נאמר למשה בסיני, ולא גם כי נאמר בכל מה שנמצאים בתלמוד, יסמכו על אחת משלוש עשרה מידו, שהוא דרבנן, כי פעמים יהיה פירוש מקובל. Okay. And then he goes on to say, don't think that I don't consider him to be amitiot, okay? And then we're in the after the underlined part, the bold lines. But then he says, so why don't I count it? Ki kol ma sheyotzi adam him anafim min hasharashim shenemru lo Moshe b'Sinai b'veyur v'im tayag mitzvot v'afilu hayam motzi Moshe b'atzmo ein ra'oi l'mnotam. I think the Rambam tells us very clearly in Shor Shrishon and Shor Sheni what he means by drabanan or divrei sofrim, and that is that there's a contrast between, okay, if you look at the words of the Rambam, he contrasts that which are, I just want to quote his word, ma sheyotzi adam, on the one hand, as opposed to nemru lemosha b'sinai b'veur, v'heim tayag mitzvah. In other words, Ram says, the Gemara in the end of Mako tells us, Tayag mitzvot nemru l'moshe b'sinai. What does it mean, Tayag mitzvot nemru l'moshe b'sinai? Says the Rambam, means it was nemru b'ze'ur. Okay? Farash. Meaning that it was stated explicitly. Okay? B'ze'ur. Stated explicitly to Moshe at Sinai. Hashem gave it to us on a silver platter. Handed it to us. Tayag mitzvot nemru l'moshe b'sinai. Now, how did Hashem hand it to us? Well, there are two possibilities. Either it's black on white in Chumash, in Torah Shebichtav, or it's explicit in a direct and clear Halacha L'Moshe Misina. Either of those would be called Nemra L'Moshe Misina. Either Hashem told it to him and said, I'm telling it to you and write it down, or he said, I'm telling it to you and pass it on. But either way, it was Nemra L'Moshe b'Sinai. As opposed to, if it was implicit in what was given to Moshe, if it was intended 100%, if it was given in a form where it could be derived, applied, figured out, etc., but it's encoded, it's between the lines, it's only the implications, only the directions, only the tools with which you can decode and figure out, etc., that's not Nemra L'Moshe B'Sinai. That is what is called dirabanan or divrei sofer, meaning that the chachamim needed to do something. Now, what that something is could be one of many things. It could be that they needed to take the yudgil mido that they're given, and they needed to, you know, take this word here and that word there, and put them together and reach certain conclusions and so on. So we'll discuss more about what that whole process is, we neder, as we go on. They had to somehow apply the yudgil mido. They had to look at an extra word and figure out what its implication was. They had to say, there's this concept in the Torah, but there's a new situation we need to apply it to. They maybe had to say that the Torah empowers us to make gzera and takana, and now there's a need for a particular gzera and takana. There are all kinds of possibilities. But in a word, human input. So that's midrabanan, we did very sofer, meaning that it wasn't all done by God. We had to be involved in that partnership, and we had to do something, right, in order for that halacha to go from the implicit to the explicit, okay? And again, that could be a gzera, takana, it could be a drasha, it could be any one of many things. I'm not saying they're all the same. Let's get to the distinctions after, but let's start with the common ground. All of that, any of that, is called by the Rambam Dirabanan or Divrei Sofer. So, the Rambam will tell you that there are different methods of Kedusha, and they're all equally valid, and they all make a woman an Eshet Ish Mida Araita, and so on and so forth. And if a second person comes along and does a different method, it's still going to be, she's already an Eshet Ish, and the second Kedusha not going to be Tofes. But there are some methods of Kedusha that Hashem said to us explicitly at Sinai, this is a method of Kedushin. And others, they said, implicitly through kicha, whatever it is, by telling us it's a gzera shavah, whatever, and go figure it out yourselves, and go thrash it out, and debate, and discuss, and reach a conclusion. And then, is that legitimate, valid? Is it, you know, is it, does it have the tokef, the right, etc.? Absolutely. It's a mitiot. But, it's a mitiot, but, says the Rambam, I just want to finish with the Rambam's words for a moment. He says, don't think that I'm considered to be a mitiot, the mitiot, the right, etc. But afilu hayah motzi Moshe batzmo in right or limnotam. Why? Because they're anafim min hashorashim. Right? The Torah gave us the roots, gave us the seeds, I can't think of the English word right now, for, you know, we get a little plant from the, you know, the roots, but the gives sapling, whatever, and then we have to plant it and nurturing and grow the root, the you know, in other words, Hashem gave us the yugim, you know, the yugim midot and the kicha, but then we have to pull it out and derive it and extend it and apply it and so on and so forth, and therefore that is not nemra lamos misinai. As Ram said in Shorosh Rishon, I'm not arguing about the fact that the Torah intended that if something happens that's worthy of instituting a holiday, that Chacham should be empowered to institute, and that we should therefore, you know, absolutely the Torah wanted that under such circumstances we should have such a thing as Chanukah and Purim, etc. But is that Nemra L'Moshe Misinai? Did Hashem talk to Moshe about Chanukah or Purim? Absolutely not. That's not Nemra L'Moshe Misinai. Even though it's totally amitio and it's totally the intent of the Torah that that should be what we're doing and so on, and yes, it's lotasar and all of that, but that's not Nemra L'Moshe B'Sinai. When the Rambam gives this litmus test and says, well, does the Gemara talk about it as the right, and that's right, I think it's because the Rambam views this distinction not as the Rashi Beit says, a technical distinction. Do I put on my list of Tayag mitzvot? What does it make with a list of Tayag mitzvot? Other than, you know, what are you going to, you know, how are you going to write your pius for Shavuos? No, we're talking about something very fundamental to the whole process of Torah Shabbat Peh. We're talking about something still right, it's good Torah. So from the Rambam's point of view, and you don't have to agree with this, and other Rishonim certainly don't, the Rambam is saying when the Gemara calls something still right, it means it's talking about that that's the original body of Torah. That's what it is. Nemra L'Moshe B'Sinai. The Rambam views it as a fundamental part of the way that Chazal present to us the you know, the various areas of Torah. And so there is a fundamental difference between a Doraita and a Darabbanan, as the Rambam formulates it here. Again, we're not done. We're still in the middle, but this is part one. You know, this is the first stage of understanding it. But the difference, and I hesitate to say this at the risk of in terms of perception, trivializing, because I don't think it's a trivial point at all, but from a certain point of view, the difference between a Doraita and a Darabbanan in the Rambam's lexicon is fundamentally historical, okay? But conceptually, it's much more than that. It's a question of whether it is something that God handed us on a silver platter, whether it's something where God gave us the content in an implicit way and said, now you have to do something, you have to pull it out, you have to derive it, you have to figure it out, you have to decide something, you have to apply it, you have to create something. And those aren't all the same, but any one of the above. And that's what he calls Drabbanan. Okay. Needless to say, we then have different kinds of Drabbanan. I'm finishing up, at least I'm finishing up, as Hashem, over the next minute or two. And that's the following one, questions, comments, etc. We're not done, but at least this stage. But then, there are different types of Drabbanan. Okay, within that larger framework of Drabbanan, of where, you know, human input, not Nemel Moshe B'Sinai, it's not Bezeir, it's not explicit, it's only implicit in the Torah, etc. Then the Rambam says that there are some cases where those things that Chachamim did, where they were figuring out something which is innate in the Pesukim, where something, you know, where it's part of the Yugam Miyaz, the Drasha, etc. And then they derived it, and what is it? A straight Doraita. Or where it was a gzera, takana, etc., where it's different than saying, well, we see kicha, kicha, mistaya for us, so now I see the Torah intended for us to have kedusha kesef, is not identical to where they say, you know what, it would be a good idea based on the spirit of the Torah, etc., to institute Purim, or to have muksa, or to make shatnez drabbanan with the case. In those cases, that second type, that, if you will, that lower level of drabbanan, there, Chachamim made distinctions in terms of how they instituted, in terms of the Ramban's concept, I would argue the Rambam's concept even, of t'nai. Okay, to that second category of drabbanan, it didn't have to be different. It's not innately different, but Chacham made distinctions, and they made it different based on Tanai, etc. Okay, and that's where, you know, Binichan of Nekavar Abriyot, and where they, you know, based on how they formulated, there'd be Tanai in terms of Safek, and all those different things. Okay, that's that second category. So the that second type of Drabbanan is basically equivalent to the Ramban's type of Drabbanan, but for different reasons. Okay, but Lamaisa, it's going to come out to, on a practical level, it's going to be like the Ramban, the Rabbana. Okay, so that's in a nutshell. I'd like to try and show you how this understanding of the Rambam is in the Rambam, it's in the Rambam's words. I think we started to see it, but I'd like to see it a little bit more, and I'd like to also show how this answers other questions of the Ramban on the Rambam, and how it's consistently what the Rambam's doing through Shar Shrishan, Shani, and Shlishi, Vetar Hashem, tomorrow. And with that, wrap up this idea, and then we're going to move on to an even bigger project, which is the question of Al Yamin Shu Smol Val Smol Shu Yamin, okay, which is a big issue in Shar Shrishan. Okay. Question.
Stuff derived from Yud Gimel Nidot, that stuff wouldn't be Al Tanai?
Right, that's what I'm saying. I don't think that the Ram would say that they didn't apply Tanai to those things. And that's why, although he calls it Rabbanan, he doesn't say that it's a lower level in terms of, you know, Halach Lamaisa. And this is, I think, the answer to Ramban. Kasha, yes.
Yeah. So the things derived from Yud Gimel Nidot, you know, the first Moshe, would Yud Gimel Nidot, according to Rambam, given to Moshe as Sinai?
I think absolutely. I think that's what Ram
said. But then just how to use them later on, Marsha, and left for Rabbanan.
It's like you're given, like, the, you know, you're given exactly, you're given the instruction manual, you're given the, or you're given the, you know, the cipher, and you're given the encoded message, but you know, you have to decode it yourself. Now, again, that's obviously an oversimplification, but in broad strokes, that's what I think the Rambam is saying.
For the Beis Yosef, can it be that the Chachamim were, goes there, that, that Shatnez doesn't apply in a case where a person, I mean, I guess the Beis Yosef wouldn't hold this, but could someone else, or the people who are holding on him, say that the Chachamim weren't go there? Shatnez are abundant in a case where the person has nothing on under? Meaning that only goes there in a case where you have covered with a real stake, as opposed to just making a gzeira that a talis and a karmelis isn't an issue.
Of course. I'm not saying that if you hold like the Rambam, you have to reach the conclusion of Beit Yosef.
Right, no, I'm just
saying the opposite. I'm saying that, you know, to argue with the Beit Yosef is not difficult. I mean, in terms of, you know, the position of those who argue with the Beit Yosef is somewhat self-explanatory, and the Beit Yosef himself recognizes that. Right? He raises it as a question. He doesn't say it as a davar pashut. He said, I was wondering about this question, and I don't remember the exact question, but he said something like, says that Shar Lomar, Tahad Amrinan, right? And he said, you know, and he says, and he thinks that, you know, Vizen Nira, Shahu, you know, he's saying that that's what he thinks is, you know what I'm saying?
I'm just saying
the Beis Yosef position ostensibly is very difficult. This is a framework for understanding it such that it makes sense. Are you supposed to argue?
I think even people who are chuligan, it may not be so fundamentally different.
Absolutely, right, I'm agreeing with you.
Okay.
1,000%. I agree. Even if you say like the Rambam and the Ramban sign and everything else, you still don't have to reach that conclusion. And again, because the Beis Yosef himself is misufic about it to a certain degree, and I don't think that he's misufic about, you know, about the Rambam and that. I think he's misufic about how to apply it. I'm just saying that this would give a frame of reference. Yeah.
So what's the Ramban's interpretation of Rabbanan? Where there's a long answer.
No, the Ramban is using Drabanan in the sense that I think we usually use it, which means that it's a whole different level of Torah, that it is mandated by the Torah to be such a thing, but it's not that it is not an automatic thing. It's not that if you don't like Narakonica, you're over on Allah. Right? It's not that it has the tokif of, it's innately it's a different level than Doraita. Not that it's Chacham set it up that way, but really innately it's the same thing. Okay, good day, everyone.
Thank you.